If you're an athlete, you know the greatest motivator of all is the fear of letting your teammates down. After all, a team is only as good as its weakest link. So you owe it to those wearing the same jersey as you to be your best every time you step on the field. That's why there's no vape in team. When you vape, you can expose your lungs to toxic chemicals that can damage your lungs. If you're a step behind, the team's a step behind. Brought to you by The Real Cost and the FDA.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
What's up, everybody? Welcome to another episode of Game Dev Unchained, the number one game development podcast about game development and the lifestyle thereof. I am your host, Brandon Pham, and with me, it's that time of the month, Ray Grant. How you doing, Ray?
How you doing, Brandon? What's up?
All right. For those who have read the title episode, we are going straight into Roundtable News.
I can see that. Yeah. You got something in your teeth, too.
Oh, yeah.
You don't have a mirror? What's wrong with this dude?
I just ate some bell peppers, bro.
I see.
That's staying in for people who want to watch the video, who just only listen to the audio podcast.
Oh my goodness!
Ray, never give me a break. What you been up to, man? Nothing. People
just living life, you know, out here.
Yeah, people struggling to find one job, but you're working too. Just like taking all the jobs now, taking all the jobs out in the Bay.
No, man. Yeah, it's time. It's time to do my own thing. You know, it's time to try to build something that I am responsible for, and try to build a team, and try to get money, and try to do all the things. So that's what's happening right now, and that's pretty good. But in the meantime, I'm also like I also want to continue helping people out, building teams and building cool stuff, right? And so while we build up the thing, I'm also kind of working with some people that I know, helping them build out their studio and hire their team and working on some cool stuff. So it's kind of a win-win type of situation. Yeah. But it's definitely like a lot of work right now, because like you said, it's basically two jobs.
Yeah. I mean, what's the temperature like? There's a couple of things to gauge, right? I know you're heavily involved with Game Heads, you know, helping education. And at the same time, you're in the Bay Area, which has been heavily influenced with what's going on in the industry. Like, do you feel like the curve for new students, curve for people slowly, you know, bouncing back, like has the storm passed?
No,
you feel like no. Okay.
But like in terms of people losing their jobs, I think that storm has passed. But in terms of people looking for jobs right now, the picking, like from the people I'm talking to, not just for young people, like I'm even talking to some senior people, and everybody I'm talking to is kind of like the it's very slim pickings out there. Mm-hmm. In terms of like the dream job or a job for a senior person, or like being picky is not a thing that's happening right now, as far as I can tell. You know, with everybody scaling back on the projects that they're working on, I think that's contracted the amount of available jobs that are out there. There's still jobs out there, but it's just like there's a lot of people also looking, right? So it just seems to be really hard right now.
Well, I mean, at least on my side, yeah, it still seems pretty tough. Like, there's just so many people out of work to suddenly be having work, right? It just doesn't work that way. It takes a while to kind of ramp up. So I think, you know, originally I kind of heard through the grapevine that it'll take a couple quarters, basically until June, to kind of feel like the industry has legs again. However, you know, we've talked about this many times. It's like the industry is still healthy, you know, like in terms of like
define healthy.
Well, a week later, that company, X company, right, lays off a bunch of people. X company records record high profits, right? It's like they announce usually like that was the best year we've ever had. We have studios kind of bragging how much money they're saving with these layoffs. I mean, I've heard like major studios, and I'll quote because I can't really name them, like they save like $300 million, you know, per quarter of these type of layoffs, you know. That's a huge amount. That you can't just overlook. And you know, we've talked about, you know, this is an overcorrection. You know, there has been a lot of overhiring in the COVID years, right? So, you know, people use as an excuse to kind of balance the sheets a bit, sadly, and you know, that's the case.
Yeah, and but, honestly, there's a lot of games. There's a lot of games out there too. A lot of games getting made, right? So a lot of these studios are like, okay, maybe we need to focus the lineup. You know, reduce the amount of games that we got going on, and also try to make them better and higher quality. And in the meantime, save money, right? By laying off a whole bunch of people.
So there's a couple of things I want to kind of get into, which is, has been like the recurring theme, I feel like the past year and a half, and it's actually been pretty inspirational. For a time when devs are kind of lost and not sure they want to go back to like bigger companies and maybe looking to size down or looking to like maybe, you know, look for a new direction for their career, as in like maybe trying to solo dev. I know a lot of developers right now who've been kind of hit by some of this stuff is like rolling up their sleeves and going UEFN. I mean, people are looking for alternatives, which is usually what happens when you get laid off. You question everything, and you can't help but feel that there needs to be another way, or at least prevent this very terrible thing ever happening again. I mean, especially for veterans, it's like, yo, how many hits like this can I take, right? So like this piece of news is actually pretty interesting. It's kind of been the thing that's been going on lately. Like this past year, we see PAL Worlds. We see like these kind of smaller teams making it big, right? Baldur Gates is at best is like a AA team, right? But they basically, the publishing director, publishing director basically said marketing is dead. And this is a game I feel like starting that that trend of like no advertising, right? It just comes out and through a lot of buzz, like really finds its way through success, right? You don't see TV commercials, you don't see journalism anymore.
Sure, but I would take a step back from that and say that they came out with a more community focused approach, right? Like it came out in early access.
Yeah,
for years. Like it wasn't just like a 1 year early access either, right? It was out for like 2-3 years in early access, right? And so like also like it's D&D, right? Yeah. Like you could say that marketing's dead and all that, but if you're making like a licensed property, which you know Baldur's Gate is a licensed property,
yeah,
right, to a bunch of nerds, and let's be real, like we make, we love to play video games. We are nerds, right? Yeah. And D&D, the Venn diagram between D&D and nerds is like a perfect circle. You know, like there's a lot of things that made that game successful, and you know they executed it. It was a great game, right? With great story and all of that, but they had the time to do that, to build on the. They were basically building on their past successes. And so like, it works in that case, But now let's say I'm coming out with a brand new IP. Is marketing dead? I still think I got to market to people, but I also have to do all the other things, right? Build community, get people interested in your game, bring people along with the development of your game.
Yeah, there's definitely like a lot of things to consider, obviously.
Yeah.
You know, it wasn't just it's Baldur's Gate 3, first of all, right? It's like, you know, it's the third in its series. What's impressive about the game also is like it came out during like a very crowded market in terms of Magic, right? Magic was nowhere to be found, and suddenly there's like three games about Magic coming that year. But Baldur's Gate's obviously kind of risen from the heap of trash, right? That is everything else, and did really well. There were a few things though that I think really stuck out to me when he was quoting like certain things like marketing's dead. Like in terms of like traditional avenues like journalism, TV commercials, you know, these are like very heavy, loaded type of avenues that just were, well, for a lot of games, it's unattainable, right? Like for a lot of games, it's just too expensive, bloats out the projects, and not a lot of return on investment, right?
Yeah.
And the reason why I feel like this certain article resonated is like we saw like a bunch of these type of games, really, such as Pal World, such as what's the other game with the space one? I got Lethal.
Lethal Company,
right?
Yeah.
There's like four of them, I think, that just kicked off this year, one after another, that just happens to like a BattleBit remaster, like these type of games, right? Just the early access, getting people to have hands on is the new avenue of advertising. Well, it's not new, right?
Yeah.
It's before we used to have demo CDs, you know, before we have I think Steam is probably the oldest version of that.
I don't even think you're alive when demo CDs were a thing.
I played some demo CDs, man. I had some Net Zero back then.
I don't think you're alive in them times. But I don't think early access is new, right? Because it's how long has it been now? It's like at least 10 years, right? Since people have been doing early access, maybe shorter, but it seems like forever.
I feel, early access has been the thing, but I don't think it's been this popular recently.
Honestly, I think it's because there's so much competition, the market is so crowded and stuff.
Yeah.
You bringing building community around your game is a really big important factor in getting people interested in your game, and so you can show to so you can show to publishers and financiers, look how much people support our game, please give us money, right? Because I feel like the publishers and the financiers are even more risk averse now.
Yeah,
because they some of them have lost their shirts or made a lot of bad bets, didn't really know what they're doing. I think a lot of them still don't know what they're doing and what a good game is, right? And so now they're like, well, we need more proof points to de-risk your game. And so that's where early access can really help, right? You put in some sweat equity, you get a early access game out there. That you can show, hey, I have now 10,000, 2,000, 30,000 people playing the game, this many wish lists or whatever, right? And then that can help go, oh, okay, maybe your thing is actually something we should invest in since people like it, right? So it's just another way that people that don't know necessarily how to pick good are now like they're using that as another number to help them de-risk projects.
Yeah. Right. I mean, there's definitely a big push or for seeing no bullshit, right? I think a lot that's been like so many players have been burnt. They've gotten a lot smarter in terms of like the game dev cycle, right? They like there's more gamers understanding game development than before. I feel like at least some more insight, right, in terms of vocabulary, right? When I look on these sites, man, they're mentioning, they're not as obviously as knowledgeable as we are behind what things are, but there's definitely more interest in terms of like understanding crunch, understanding pushing a product out with the patch.
I think there's some maybe they mention those kind of words, right? But at the end of the day, I still see like developers will complain about crunch and working conditions and forming a union and doing this and that. Yeah. And the vast majority of gamers will be like, yo, where's the game at? Shut up.
Yeah.
Where's the game at? Right. And so like, I don't think they really, and then some of them that claim to know, like, this is this spout nonsense, right? Most of the time. Right.
Yeah.
So like, I don't know if that's any different or is trending any other way than it has always been. You know what I mean? Like, at least not from what I'm seeing. I don't know if they're more savvy. Maybe more people want to make video games or more interested in video games. But in terms of savviness, I think people are just like, yo, give me my thing. Where's it at?
You know? Yeah. There's definitely some of that for sure. I feel like it's in response to a lot of gamers out there, game developers that have been kind of been in this mindset of especially AAA, right? I feel like AAA are comfortable with the idea of releasing something, having some time to polish it after launch, right? I mean, it's gotten worse. I remember the time when we were at the edge of like, all right, we can release this. It's basically an empty disc and we'll just do a day one patch, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, man, this is definitely going to be a problem because, yeah, you know, I think bigger studios are more they lean more towards like really playing on the edge of things, right? They're more likely to do the day one patch. They're more likely to cram as much stuff as they can. They more likely to go over budget, right? Because they're not faced by the repercussions of that as much of a smaller team. A smaller team is like, hey, we're running out of time. You feel it immediately. It's like, hey, we are gonna miss a paycheck, or we're gonna have to size down on like these extra things, you know, we gotta let someone go to finish this game. We're gonna like the transparency there's from the person kind of making these decisions to the person's doing this stuff is a lot non-existent in a lot of the cases in these smaller teams. In their bigger teams, you know, you're able to kind of comfortably be behind these gates. And it is at these bigger studios that you basically get blindsided the next day you have no money and suddenly you have no job, right? It's very sudden. Whereas smaller, so you can start seeing the gradual decline if things aren't working out. Right. You see, you're face to face with the founder, with the owner, right? You can see the stress, right? Yeah. They're a lot more open about the everyday woes, right? And so you can at least prepare for yourself, but at the same time, there seems to be more consideration of doing things on time, like doing things right, right? Like ethically, I think smaller studios are more inclined to like, because there is so much transparency to try harder, right?
I think it's not a necessity because they're a smaller studio, right? Like, you know, like, so they might not have millions of dollars in the bank to rest on or big budget other title that's going to sell that will make up the loss or anything like that, right? For a lot of them, that's it. You know what I mean? And so it's just, it's way more life or death, I feel like, right? So there's more urgency, right, with your smaller studio. Unless you have like, unless you have a huge hit game that just goes buck wild, and then you can kind of really take your time, you know?
Well, speaking of a huge game that did really well, all right, you were just mentioning this before the call. Maynard Lords, right? Is doing really well, right? And this is, you know, I brought up the other fact with Baldur's Gate is because I keep seeing it. Like, it's kind of like the theme of the year, right? Like, one hit from a small team happens. It has its time to shine, usually a month and a half, which is a generous amount of time considering how many games come out. This game came out, I think it was, I was reading on it, 3.2 million wish lists. It came out in the weekend, so as of this podcast, 425, right, or something like that, 426 when it came out in the weekend, sold a million copies. Everyone's talking about it. It's having its moment. Uncontested right now, 160,000 concurrent players, which is super impressive, and it's a solo dev, apparently. Right. And it's really, I think that the idea of a solo dev has, in terms of quality like this, right? I mean, we've always been kind of used to solo dev, 2D graphic, top down, side scroller, something like that. But I think it was like maybe a few years ago where this, the idea of a solo dev of like basically a AAA quality game was kind of new.
Yeah. I wouldn't go that far, definitely not AAA quality, but it's 7 years in development.
Yeah.
Is a long time. Right. And it's because it's one, like a solo dev. Right.
Yeah.
And then I'm also surprised that, like this type of game is my jam, right? Like I'm into sim colony sims and 4X games and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
But I don't think 4X games sell this well, this fast.
What do you think is the difference with this game so far as you're playing through it?
I think some people were initially calling it like a Total War killer, saying that it was like Total War, but even more stuff. And it's not Total War like at all, right? And the dev even had to clarify that. That might have helped some of the momentum behind it, or people were like expecting, although I also don't think Total War, does Total War sell that much? I don't even know what the numbers are, right?
Like, not in a weekend.
Like yeah, these all seem like niche games, right? But also I think the fact that it's single dev and it looks this good, it looks good, like don't get me wrong, I think that has made people go, oh man, let me check this out, right? Yeah. And
it's a selling point.
Yeah, but I think like most, like there's some really good colony sims, and I guess I just don't know the numbers of how well those games do, but I didn't think those games did this well, this fast.
Well, it doesn't, it hasn't made the news like this for a while. We can say that.
Yeah, for sure.
Like sim games take a while. And,
but there's some sim games that, you know, or Civ, Millennia just came out. There's the Anno games, and those teams work on those games for years and release updates and patches. There's the Endless Space games, there's the Endless Legend, there's Stellaris, right? There's a lot of, like, I love all these games, right? But like none of them struck me as like the media talking about them 24/7 and everybody talking about them, you know what I mean? But they have a kind of a really long tail in terms of like loyal fan base and buying of content packs and things like that. But this is kind of surprising me. Yeah,
it's very promising. I mean, it seems to be trending up, and not just the game, but the idea of like being a solo dev or a smaller team being able to output pretty quality game, complicated game like a sim. I'm surprised, you know, you're playing on PC Game Pass, which makes me kind of like realize, you know, that marketing route, you know, hasn't really been explored enough. I mean, we've heard so many games like Power Wars kind of benefited from the Game Pass. You know, people were able to try it and it still didn't hurt sales. Like, maybe because a lot of Xbox people don't buy games. They just have Game Pass. So maybe that's why. Who knows? And people who don't have a Game Pass usually don't have an Xbox or whatever, right? So they don't care. But I'm very surprised that that is a thing now where a game actually does and can do well if it's being offered free on one marketplace. And it's a completely the different audience. There is no cross contamination in terms of hurting sales, which sounds pretty promising.
Yeah. Or maybe it would have sold more if it wasn't on Game Pass.
I don't know, man.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know either, honestly. And like, every time I think about Game Pass, like Starfield was on Game Pass and some other games are on there. Like, I don't understand why those games are there, because it seems like it would cannibalize sales. But somehow it doesn't. So, yeah, I don't know.
There's another game. I don't know if you had a chance to try, right? Moon Studios, No Rest for the Wicked. I mean, that's definitely... a game that's been making the news. It's kind of been sort of mixed. It's not like overly as celebrated as I thought it would. A lot of people are like, give it a chance. I haven't played with it. Is it just because it's hard, or is it just so different from like what they've done before, like Ori of the Blind Forest?
It's definitely way different than Ori, right? It looks great. But yeah, it's kind of like, it's hard. It's a roguelike. It gives off very much Demon Souls vibes. You know what I mean? But yeah, it's I haven't played it. I didn't play it very long. I played it for a little bit and I haven't managed to get back to it. But it's hard. The combat's hard. It's like skill-based combat kind of thing. Like, you know, it's all about perfect parry and dodging and all that kind of stuff, right? Yeah. So you know I like it. But in terms of like mass appeal, it's hard.
It's very limited.
It's hard. Yeah.
Is it because of the genre, or is it it's such a departure from their fan base of what they did with Ori? Do you feel like they're like finding a whole new audience and have to start over with this one, or what do you think?
Yeah, I could see people that are into Ori not necessarily being into it's a completely different game, right?
Yeah.
But like, I don't know if it matters, right? Because it has actually gotten some good marketing, right? And it was at the Game Awards, had a video at the Game Awards and stuff like that, right? And then when it was coming out, everybody's talking about it. But it is, you know, it's early access, right? So it's going to be like a long play into full release. So we'll just see how it goes.
So like, this is why I wanted to bring the early access, like a game like this, even though Moon Studios is not indie anymore, right? I feel like they're full blown AA published.
But it's a published game. It's published by a private division.
I guess a part of 2K. But they went the early access route, right? Mm-hmm. So do you feel like this is more and more becoming, because it's so acceptable now, more viable for bigger and bigger games? Like, do you ever see maybe not Call of Duty, but a game of that size, right, doing early access? Like a full-blown $70 game opening itself up midway.
It's not a $70 game, it's like a $40 game,
yeah, right? But like is it creating a roadmap for like the $70 game to allow early access midpoint of development?
I think also like to do early access, it depends on the type of game you're making too.
Yeah,
so it has to be a game that like invites replayability,
Yeah.
Right. Where replayability is actually a thing about the game. Because if you do early access and then I can just play through the game and it's broken
beat the whole game
or whatever. Yeah. And the, yeah. or ruin some of the story plots or whatever. And then I'm like, yeah, so like, I'm not going to play this game anymore. Right. So I think only certain type of games can really do early access effectively. But to see it more is not that surprising, like giving like the economics of the whole situation. You know what I mean? Where like, hey, we need to show that our game deserves the funding, or, you know, or we need to show we need the revenue to finish the game, right? We only have enough to get it to this certain point. But to get it to the next point, now we need to go early access to get more money in so that we could continue developing the game. Right.
Do you see it going the other way? Like a game that has a 6-year fully funded promise, releasing at four years and it's not getting the reception it needs, being cut off essentially.
I think that's what we're seeing now. I think that's exactly part of the layoffs that we see now. A lot of companies are like, why are we taking this risk though?
Yeah.
Right. So then like, let's get rid of this game, let's lay off these people. And let's stick to the more sure bets. Like it's all about risk aversion. You know what I mean? And so I think like in this, especially in this economic climate, that's exactly why you're seeing that.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
This episode is brought to you by Reese's Peanut Butter Cups. In breaking news, leading scientists worldwide are conducting experiments to determine if Reese's Peanut Butter Cups are the perfect combination of peanut butter and chocolate. However, it appears the study was inconclusive, as the scientists couldn't help but eat all the Reese's. Because when you want something sweet, you can't do better than Reese's. Find Reese's now at a store near you.
It reminds me of Trine isometric.
it gives you a Trine vibe, but I think it looks better than Trine. Like in terms of like and it has like a pretty interesting visual style. But yeah,
It feels very similar. Like the art style is almost
like it's the same. It's different. It's different, almost the same, but it's different. And then like there's like no physics.
No physics. It's just straight up like Diablo. It's a very fun. I love studios that diversify, obviously. I mean, back in PlayStation 2, right? Yeah, the same studios that did Akami did something else, you know, and they were able to jump around because of its like I guess relatively back then, those budgets were obviously a lot cheaper than to make now, right? But like, I've always loved Japanese companies because they are so good at just changing it up, right? Mm-hmm. It wasn't about like sequels after sequels. It was like, I want to make this game. Like back then, I think Kojima and Nintendo was the only one stuck with kind of, you know, having these franchises and having to like, because it was so popular, to keep doing the same thing.
But even with the franchise, like at least with Kojima, even though he's doing franchises, he always tried to keep mix it up. Right.
Yes.
Like I think
within Snake the universe,
Eater, Snake yeah. Eater and other games were very different.
Yeah. He did a really good job just changing from MGS1 to MGS2, MGS3.
Yeah. Yeah.
Very different game. The one thing that I found interesting too was there was this other I was trying to remember, but No Rest for the Wicked was one, but there was another. So I was flipping through Netflix, right? On my TV. And then suddenly I saw a category for games. It's like very mobile like type of games, but on the TV, right? Mm-hmm. I was like, they're starting to expand their master plan, right?
Did you click on it?
I didn't want to play it.
No, you should have clicked on it.
Why? What did I say? It was coming soon.
I can also rant about what happens after that.
Okay, you go for it. All right. I didn't go past it because I don't like, I don't know. I was sleeping.
You can see the master plan, yes. But right now, if you click on it, it goes, hey, take out your phone.
Oh, no way. Really?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
So you download on your phone to play on your phone. You don't play on the TV, or you use your phone as a controller. What?
No.
Not even that?
Your phone. You download it on your phone. Yeah, you play it on your phone.
So it was just a big poster on the TV?
Yeah. So somebody I know was actually complaining about this. And they were like, this sucks.
Yeah, it's stupid.
I don't care about your games. I care to watch movies. Don't advertise to me about your games. And then two, you can't even play the games on the device, right? But you said it. It's the master plan, right? It's like, okay, we have to get people used to seeing games here, right?
How do they feel?
And then when the streaming comes, it's now a seamless transition to just boot the streaming thing on the TV. You know what I mean? So it's part of the plan. I really like how slow they're going. Unlike some other people that did another streaming games platform that shall remain nameless that definitely didn't go slow and then failed because they were not ready. And did not have anything ready and didn't have a plan and didn't have an idea of what the hell they were doing.
Let's just say it's they didn't Stadia long.
Let's say the company's name started with a G, but anyway, but they messed up, right? And I think Netflix is taking a completely different tact, and they're going real slow with it.
They're very tactical with it. I mean, me and you know probably a lot of people working at Netflix, and it's been dead quiet for years, right? And they've been kind of just very slow, secretive, and from what I've heard, it's the small games and the big games too. They're not just working on these kind of like Monument Valley, like graphical, pretty isometric 2D games, right? They're definitely for good reason, right? Trying to expand their IPs, they have valuable IPs, you know.
Yeah. I'll take something back. I actually just tested it.
It works now?
On the PC. On PC, it just goes straight into playing the game.
It clearly
labels it as beta.
Yeah.
And it straight up launches the game on your PC. But on your TV, it'll tell you to take out your phone.
I bet it's a controller interface issue. Because I imagine how you're going to play it, right? But like, I feel like if they turn your phone into a controller, that'd be the coolest way to do it. That makes sense to me. But I think, the Netflix is definitely a sleeper console or a sleeper game giant that's about to really explode. You play Game Pass and stuff. I have Game Pass too, man. I don't touch that thing. I have it as a write-off, to be honest. But like,
actually, by the way, the game FX games beta.
Yeah.
Is 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6.
It's like 7 games or something.
7, 8. Yeah. 8, 9. It's 9 games.
Yeah.
So
like I was looking at some statistics. Like they really went big on very smartly. When GTA 6 trailer came out, they had all the GTAs available on their Netflix app, all the old GTA 3, Vice City, all those games.
Yep.
And so unsurprisingly, they were the best games on their platform. I was like, it's like, there you go. you know, it which actually goes into something that I kind of want to talk to you about. Like a lot of times when we look at the movie industry, right? It kind of we're really close cousins, but they also are kind of like our precursor to what's going to go on with the game industry, right? Like the same way the tech industry, we look at the tech industry. They start with all the layoffs and it's like, oh, games are next. And sure enough. So streaming movies for a long time was going up. They were in this race, right? They were in the race of creating their own IPs so that they make their streaming platform more interesting, more inviting. Yeah. Subscribe here. Disney Plus, Netflix, Hulu. Well, Hulu and Disney now. Max, you know, everybody, right? And now I think it's slowly, finally withering down. It's like, oh, it's harder than we thought, right? Only Netflix is making money out of this, right? So Netflix has... I was flipping through Sex and the City, right? So I'm saying this because there's this talk now and this worry. And I've seen like a lot of articles about directors, about how these streaming giants, which is the new Hollywood, all right, instead of spending millions developing new shows, new movies, they're just renting old ones for nostalgia. People are in nostalgia now. They'd rather rewatch The Office. They'd rather spend those hours watching Sex and the City. And now HBO, a competitor, is loaning their IP to Netflix for lots of money. However, probably cheaper than developing their own IP, right? Which is a hit and miss. A classic with an audience is more than happy to watch Sex and the City again. Than the Netflix trying to create something like Sex and the City to get that audience. So with that being said, we're already seeing that trend. And there's a lot of worries about this new age where we're not making anything new anymore. And it's just about rewatching old shit because there is a lot of old shit. Like I am actually overwhelmed by how many shows and movies on my queue. Right. I have so many that I know that are solid, that are good. I haven't even watched Fallout yet. And I know I want to watch Fallout. And I know it's a good. I haven't watched Fallout. I haven't seen Last of Us. Right. I'm just so backed up with not just movie, but even games. It's so much that wants to take my time and so little time to do it. Right.
But I think you explained the problem. Right. Well, is that there's like a lot of stuff, right? To and so like
so I'm this is what I'm starting to, you probably know my next question. We're starting to see that with remasters, right? People rather play Snake Eater remaster, Resident Evil remaster. Yeah. We're seeing all types of remaster now. Max Payne 1 and 2 is about to get remastered. I'm playing that shit, right?
I don't think it's new. I think
there's going to be a stop of funding new things? Is it slowed down since the movies have always been kind of like
it's never been different, right? I think sequels and all that have always been, hey, can we make a sequel? Can we do an established IP?
Yeah.
Has always been way more favorable than building your own IP, right? And it was indies that were like, oh no, we're gonna make our own IP, but then just making it for really, really, really cheap, right? Yeah. And so that kind of like the indie renaissance happened, all of that, right? But all the big companies, all the top 10 games, you know, it's you're gonna look down the list, it's gonna be a whole lot of sequels and established IP, right? And very few new IP. There was like literally what was it, the new zoo report talking about, you know, who's making the money and all that kind of stuff, and playtime of the players and all that kind of stuff. And a large percentage of the playtime is the annual releases. These things, these like NBA 2K, like, and I worked on 2K and I've just spoken with the people that run the business on the 2K side, you know, right? And so like I know the mindset there, and it's like I try to, like when I worked at 2K, I try to get them to make a new IP. You know, and it was like, why would I have you work on a new IP, but I got to have you working on 2K? I know exactly how much money.
It's a sure thing. Yeah.
I know exactly how much money I'm going to make putting you on 2K. I have no idea how much money I'm going to make putting you on something.
Right.
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 It's been like this. It's like this forever. Right. And so, I didn't like looking at the movie side of things. It's funny you said Netflix is doing well. Like, they're doing well now after they cracked down on the passwords, right? But before they cracked down on the passwords, doing all this new IP was costing them a ton of money, right?
Yeah.
And so, of course, yeah, now they're like, okay, like, we have to be a little more selective with what we're going to green light, and let's bring in nostalgia to fill out the catalog, right? Because, like, yeah, like, a savage IP is going, it's going to do better. Just off the rip, it's again, it's the whole thing about risk mitigation, right? Established IP mitigates the risk, right?
Right. So, like, let's go in the deeper down, because this topic is, I feel like it's trending really hard towards that, where games, bigger studios have always taken lesser risks, right? They've always favored sequels. But, like, is there a point where, since they sized down so much, I mean, they laid off all these people, that remastering their hundreds of catalog, like, let's say EA for example, right? They have so many PlayStation 1, PlayStation 2 games where they can spend the next 10 years just updating that, and it will sell. Like, I mean, they did that with Dead Space.
Please tell Capcom to do that with Power Stone. Please.
I feel like they are. I mean, Capcom is leading the way of remaster. They're the king of remastering.
Yet, I have not seen a remastered Power Stone.
Because they're killing it, Resident Evil, and they're digging deeper in everything else eventually, right?
And you don't even know what Power Stone is. You're
just like, I play Power Stone, bro. Isometric four-play battles. I played in the arcade, son. I love that game. It's my favorite game. Yeah.
First of all, you're baiting yourself out because you said four player, and it was.
I used to play four player. There's a four player game too.
The first one was two players. Oh, the second one was four players.
I'm talking about the best ones.
I just want to point that out.
I'm pointing out the best ones. All right. I can talk about shit or the best ones. All right. But, like, I do feel like we're following the footsteps of Hollywood, and at the same time, you know, it'll allow. I mean, it's always been that way, right? But it's going to be more so that than ever. These smaller teams with finding, like, great success, smaller budgets, lower risk, having the patience, the audience are more sympathetic. Or get more excited, right? When you hear smaller teams doing visually impressive things, right? And it plays well, right? Like you said, like, people will just want to check it out because they heard that it was made by a small team. Like, that is a selling point now. I think because it probably carries a weight of honesty, I guess, right? It feels like I'm less likely to get bullshitted over, right? It's not like, it feels like Anthem. Like, Anthem was, like, I felt like the apex of bullshitting AAA, right? I felt like it was the height of, like, that trend of big bloated marketing, big bloated promises, and then just falling flat on its face, right? With everything. And then since then, I feel like it's just been just this, like, fast decline of trusting bigger studios. And I don't know. I don't know if it's a good thing or a bad thing. If it's a big team, like, do I want them to take less risk? Probably.
No.
You think so? Right? No. What do you want? I mean, big risk means layoffs. That's what it means.
Well, it just means better products.
Yeah, but we've been a part of those big teams, man.
Right.
We've seen so many products get watered down so hard.
Well, no, and
that's bad.
Yeah. That's what I'm saying.
The vision is lost.
It's like a lot of these, I think risk aversion has gotten worse, right? over the years, right? So it's been like, you know, bigger teams cost more money, so it has to be a more sure thing.
Yeah, right?
as
smaller updates
as we do the arms race, you know what I mean? The AAA arms race. So yeah, maybe we should just have like 50 people sized teams, like a bunch of them, and then you see like show us the games you can make, like four 50 size people teams versus one 200 person team, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I think those four smaller teams will probably make something that's way more interesting. Now, will it sell as much? Will it reach as much as the vast variety of people that the 200 person game would? That's up for debate, right?
It's definitely changing. I mean, when was the last game that sold like bonkers, right? I mean, besides like maybe like Sony games, right? Like, you know, those are the games that seem to sell in the tens of millions.
You know,
Call of Duty, yeah, Call of Duty, but like aside from Call of Duty, right? Call of Duty is kind of like the king of killing it every year, right? Well, the hype machine is so big, but like in terms of quality, like games that people just critically rave, fans rejoice, it's like the Sony games, right? The Sony games are God of War. This is a solid game. You love Nintendo. Yes, Nintendo's its own market.
Everybody does not want to call Nintendo AAA studio. Everybody really wants to go out of their way and say that Nintendo's not a AAA studio, and then they don't realize how big those teams are.
Yeah.
Right.
No, those teams are huge.
And how much those teams make, like how much money those games make, right?
They make a lot.
Yes. Yeah,
I think they carried on like that era, like the PlayStation 2. Well, I mean, Nintendo's always been Nintendo, right? They just work smart, smaller teams. But they combine the best of what we're discussing, right? They rely on franchises that people love, right? And they keep those same guys employed. Right. Mm-hmm. And but there isn't
they don't make
that much risk.
Game. They don't make the same game. Right?
Like, they don't. They play within that universe, which is kind of like what you were saying.
Yeah. He risks it, of course. But then they always like, oh, what's the new thing?
Change
what's
it up.
The new thing we can do.
They adapt the IP to. I mean, it's very Japanese. I mean, you were talking about Kojima. Yeah, he made Metal Gear for a long time, like 17 years, right, of his life. But it wasn't the same game. You know, he really just used that as a backbone to build off of.
Game ideas.
Yeah, different game ideas. Cosmetic is different, you know. His approach, yes, there's this undertone of Metal Gear that's present in all his games. But, you know, the game design is very different in each game, right? He tries really hard to kind of amp it up, you know, adjust. It's very unique how I think Japanese kind of make games. And in a lot of those teams, I think a lot of it is because those teams stay together, which is very rare in Western studios still, right? Aside from maybe Respawn and Valve, maybe, right?
Naughty Dog, like there's always some turnover, right? But
sort of
the creative nucleus stayed together for a long time.
Yeah, the big guys are always there, I guess. Yeah. There's speaking of which, right? In terms of legacy, I know you love this. So Destiny 2, right? We have friends there at Bungie. They're struggling, man, and I can confirm that. Things aren't great over there, right? But they're coming up with a new DLC, the Final Shape, right? Which I don't think it's very, it can be very prophetic. Maybe calling things final.
No, I think they might have did that on purpose, but okay.
Yeah, but it's not good. What do you call it? Mojo. it's not good luck to kind of doom yourself like that. Like, no one's talking about Destiny anymore. This is their only thing. I know they're working on their own IP, but they're gonna have to sunset this franchise somehow, right? They can't just end it. It's one of those big studios that did things in a certain way and are kind of suffering from, I think, the old ways of making things. Did you like Destiny, man?
Yeah,
I liked it enough, right? But the fact that they're still making DLC and pouring money into it, there is a player base there, right? It's not like the top of all of the live service games that are out there. Absolutely not, right? But I think they're still doing decent numbers for the size of studio they are, right?
Goofy too. I mean, look at this. What is this?
Yeah.
What is this? It looks so bad.
I don't know, bro. I don't know.
it's a green smog.
I just work here,
bro. Cloud.
I don't even work here. But anyway,
so outdated.
Yeah. I mean, it's a custom engine, right? So using
the looks custom.
And don't say that. There's some good looking custom engines out there. Right?
Well, it looks like a duct tape. Come on. You have friends there. It's a duct tape engine, unfortunately. Tools are like impossible to use.
I don't even know, honestly.
I know. I know. I have friends there that this is what they tell me, man.
Yeah, I don't even know, bro. But that's how it is. Like, and also, I will say this. Every engine you use is the engine that you hate, right? Like you always wish you had a different engine, right? You get Unreal, you're complaining about something on Unreal and wish that it wasn't trash, right? Like every engine you hate. And so, you just hate it in different ways. You know what I mean? So I don't put much stock in that stuff, right? Because at the end of the day, it's made a very successful game that a lot of people are playing, right?
Yeah, at one point in time, a lot of people were playing.
One point in time.
Like, I just wanted you to look at that and like kind of shout out.
Sony to buy them, right? Sony bought them. But...
Yeah, they said there's more to that for sure. Like I heard through the grapevine. People tell me things, man. There's a big power struggle between Sony ownership and Bungie, right?
Of course.
Bungie wants that sweet, sweet deal. And I think I mentioned this with you on a roundtable before. They just want that sweet deal where, you know, they someone foot the bill, right? In this case, Sony, and have no accountability, right? That's how Bungie is, right?
I would say accountability.
Well, they're failing hard, and Sony's like, maybe we should start making money, guys. and so I've heard that this is kind of like their last chance to do it their way, essentially, before Sony completely takes over and Naughty Dog them, right? But
I'll say this, right? Is like, especially I can imagine there's a lot of this pressure also because of how the economy is currently.
Oh yeah, right? Makes it way worse now.
It makes it way worse because they're like, yo, like the books ain't looking too nice, and y'all is a big red mark here. Like, what's up, right? Yeah. And so I'm sure it's a lot of that too. You know.
Well, they have a fancy office, man.
Yeah. Oh yeah, I've seen the office nice.
Well, they took out like a Regal theater, basically made an office out of it. So imagine that. Just imagine your biggest 21 Regal theater and then make a game studio out of it. And so it's pretty expensive, but I kind of want to, look at that and then look at this, right? Warframe, shout out to, we have a lot of, we crossed paths with Digital Extremes before in the early days of BioShock 2. And this game has been killing it, man. A lot of people say this is what Destiny should have been, essentially, right? And just can't get right, and they constantly update their shit. Man, it looks great. Look at this.
It took them a long time to get,
and they've been making lots of money, right? Since
then, it took them a long time to get it right, but they got it right, and they're making money.
Well, look at this. Looks what Destiny tries to be, and
I never met. It's the same game, kind
of,
right?
Same but, type of game.
I never really, I always played was it. Like, I think my history with Digital Extremes is like so long, right? That I'm just like, right?
But you've been tainted.
Yeah, but there's no denying that Warframe has been doing really well. So,
Dude, I see this game. It's like, maybe I should try it. It looks good. It looks updated. Yeah. They've been consistent with their updates. And that's the thing I think hurts Bungie is like they can't disappear. Like their way of doing things, DLC, dude, for a live service game. It's like you release one thing every 2 years. It's like, what do you expect to happen? You know what I mean? You can't expect people to stick around and wait. Meanwhile, Warframe is like constantly updating, like every quarter. You know,
is Warframe on? That's a custom engine too, isn't it?
I think it's Unreal.
Is it Unreal?
I think it's Unreal.
Is it Unreal?
Yeah, I think they updated Unreal Engine 5 recently.
Is it Unreal?
Yes, Unreal 5 Devlog 2. They have dev diaries about like bringing, you know, updating the characters. And they've been transferring to Unreal Engine 5 since 2022. See, they're at the edge of technology, bro. You can't keep working on like duct tape engines and expect to be able to move fast, right? That's the problem. You know, they can't update fast.
No, there's something to be said for knowing your engine. You know, you can move a lot faster than an engine that you're familiar with.
Yeah, but like, you know, what I've heard is like these studios have a lot of turnover, man. And that's the problem with like the engines that only a few people know. Yeah. So you go in and you got to train them up. And it's like, what is this shit? And it's like, this is not fun.
I mean, we could get into all discussion about engines, but yeah. Like, I think, yeah, it just so depends on what you're trying to do. You know,
I will say this, man.
Yeah. And if you have the talent,
we all worked,
and the people to sustain it and build it and maintain it. And yes, all of that is expensive. And as soon as you talk about cross-platform dev, you need the expertise. You need like, there's all sorts of things, right? But there is something to be said for like owning and knowing the entire tech stack. And it's tailored to the game that you are making.
No, there's definitely to. I won't argue with an engineer, right?
Yeah.
Like people, I don't want people to mistake me as an Unreal fanboy. I'm not, right? Unreal, I feel lately.
Who are you talking to?
Recently.
An Unreal fanboy.
Recently. No, man. I come on, man. I complain about Epic as much as I like talk about Unreal.
No. You're just talking bad about UEFN, but you're definitely an Unreal fanboy.
I will say this about Unreal, right? And I get just as agitated when I hear everyone just like celebrating Unreal. It's like, no, man. Unreal has lately been like a hype machine, you know, a marketing team. Like most of the features don't work. You know, Nanite, Lumen, all this shit. It's not performant. Like I was playing with Metal Human, and now we're going into like dev, which, you know, we never talk about that. We talk about game dev news. MetaHuman is a piece of shit, man. Like, it's impressive as a starter packet, but in terms of like game ready assets, it's a lie, dude. I was going into the material system and the way they do it, dude, every switch, everything, how they make it so to import it in is this convoluted material system that would never work as shippable. But like that, you know, that's kind of like they're working in terms of marketing. Yeah, it's working. You know, they sell sizzle. But like lately, I feel the last few years they've leaned so heavily into selling features instead of just making the engine actually work. Right. So Unreal 5, especially, it is definitely not prime time ready, but they pushed it. And maybe that's part of, you know, the engine business is hard. I don't need to preach this to you.
Oh, hell no.
But like, I want people, I get so frustrated when I see these forums. I got in like a little scrimmage on X lately because like these I don't know who it was.
What site is X? I don't understand.
Twitter, right? There was a tweet.
Oh, Twitter.
Some kid. Like reposting Naughty Dog's like lighting method, right? In Maya, Right. Oh, isn't it so cool?
Oh, interesting. Showing their tools in Maya. Was ripping on the tools.
I was commenting off this kid who was sharing that. I was like, oh, isn't that amazing to learn people's pipeline from like a big studio? Maya is a piece of crap. Modeling. Like, I can't imagine. You know, I'll repost a tweet. I can't imagine people running a game engine through it. People are in purgatory.
I worked on Maya.
I know you worked on Maya. It's been the same. That's the problem. That's the problem, bro. Mostly Sony studios run their engine through Maya, right? And it's like the most horrific experience that recount. Lame.
I'll say that I cannot believe people do that. And I've definitely seen it in a bunch of different situations. I think another studio we were talking about earlier also used Maya as part of their workflow. And I was just like, yeah, like I get it. I can understand how you're like, hey, we need a tool to be able to see 3D geometry and a viewport and have gizmos.
Yeah.
Like, why am I going to write all of that again? Why not I just use this thing over here?
Oh, so you say the root of all this is lazy engineers?
I would say what ends up happening is you prototype and you get it up and running.
And then you stick to it.
And then it's never the most important thing, right? Because it works.
Yeah.
Right. And so like, why would we change it? It works.
Because it takes 9 years to make that freaking game. That's why.
We have to make the game. I can't be changing out the editor out from under the team while we're making the game.
But because they didn't invest into a proper just engine tools, right? Yeah. It takes the Sony studios a long ass time, mm-hmm. right? Because you have like 18 programs up. This is where I feel like for new students or newer people in the industry, like it doesn't get talked enough because they see Last of Us, they see what the great things Naughty Dog is able to kind of pump out of this crap. They see the results and they're like, oh, that must be the way. Let's follow. Let's preach. Right. And I hate it. I hate the fact that you talk to those developers at Sony, it sucks. You know, it really sucks. And I've been through those too. Like, you know, obviously at Call of Duty, we have their own engine and it's horrific in terms of just going through it. And once you learn like the shortcuts, right? And basically you get I don't know.
Games like Call of Duty, games like Apex Legends, like 60 hertz. 120 hertz on console, right?
Are great things. Of course, it does that better
without doing what they're doing.
Sure, right? And I like the fact that there's a lot of tools and resources, right? But even when I was working there with three different main Call of Duty studios, there was three different versions of that engine, right? It was so crazy how they couldn't even decide. Eventually, I think they converged to the Infinity Ward original version of the engine, right? But I guess what I'm trying to say is like, there's just not, it upsets me when I see people talking about tools and, you know, they're being misled in a way, right?
Yeah.
About like, yeah, they make God of War, but that guy wanted to kill himself every time he wanted to import something. It's like, and you know, I don't know what the solution is. I think
it's all trade offs. You know, like you just have to make trade offs every day. Every decision is a trade off, right?
I'll give you a direct example, right? So
you're gonna go to Naughty Dog and tell them their engine sucks.
I'll tell them right now, dude.
And you know what they're gonna do? They're gonna look at you and be like, "Oh yeah, and then wipe the tears from their eyes with the $100 bills and not get two shits about what you're saying.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And I'll be like, yeah, you know, your contract ends next month, so a new kid's gonna enjoy your badge while you're still there, right? We know there's a turnover every November, right? It's no big secret. But I'll give you a direct example, right? Like, you know, fortunately, you know, we've been able to. My company worked with Blizzard. You know, we were able to kind of look at their tools. And like, even friends that work there, right? They were explaining kind of like their process of working on something like Overwatch 2, right? Mm-hmm. And a lot of like why they're stuck with the pipelines and the tools is because the people who wrote it left, right? They're, you know, over 10-year period, you know, mm-hmm. there's turnover or people retire or they move on to different projects and they're so afraid of breaking anything that they don't want to try anything new, right? Mm-hmm. So I'm sitting there watching their process in Photoshop. It's like, all right, this is how we texture, this is what you do, we put things in folders, and then you are able to do this. It's like, you're explaining to me Substance. You guys basically tried, right, to make Substance Painter out of Photoshop. They have a program for this that makes this way better. Right.
That also costs a whole lot of money. But anyway,
not that much more if you consider the amount of time, right, that it takes to do this same thing in their process versus my process. Right. But like, it was one of those things, like it's a house of cards, essentially. Right. We don't want to mess with any of these things because it might suddenly, you know, Overwatch 2 won't be successful.
But like I said, there's that. And it's also like, hey, do we spend that time doing this or do we spend the time doing that? And like, and this might have more perceived value. You know what I mean? Because sometimes people value the short-term gains for over the long-term gains, right? And like, I always think like doing large technological projects in a game studio setting where there's always the pressure of shipping has always been like something that I didn't like, right? Because there's always like, no, we have to ship, or we have to prototype this thing. We don't have time. How long is it going to take you? Oh, I need 6 months and three engineers to go and rewrite this pipeline. More times I'm going to get told no straight up. You know, I could present data all day, right? But like, the effort might not be seen as worth the benefit. You know?
Yeah. And it's unfortunate because I feel like, obviously, you know, if we're stuck with one engine, there are still great game design ideas that can come out of it. However, you know, you coming from your background know that some games can tend to look the same, feel the same because of their strengths of that engine. Of course, that team can expand from that and make it as custom as they can.
Yeah.
But they're restricted, right, to whatever that engine is known for. So, like, you know, I think more than ever, we're starting to really see. I mean, we talked about you a couple of roundtables ago where proprietary engines are becoming less and less. Right. And the time spent on those proprietary engines to update it to be competitive is considerably less, probably. Right. Budget is kind of being reused in other resources where they feel it's more bang for the buck. So are we going to reach a point where all the games, aside from AI, dictating what it'll be, is gonna feel and look the same because it's all being made with the same tools?
Yeah, like that's a concern. I think that is a concern, like for some people, and they're like, that's why we need custom engines, because it allowed for different looks and different games to be made and all this kind of stuff. And I think you can make different things in these generic engines, but I think one of the big things is like, people want to buy a generic engine. And they're like, you know what? I'm going to buy a generic engine. I don't need a graphics programmer anymore, do I? Right? And like, and I'm mortified when I hear that, because they could never be more wrong. They absolutely need a graphics programmer still, and you need an engine programmer still to understand the engine
that you've just bought, right? And to be able to modify it and also add your own special stuff to it, right? So yes, I think that is like that is a concern for a lot of people. It's like if we go with only two engines or three, you know, like what's going to happen? And then there's also the aspect of like the engines that we're going with are all like commercial engines with EULAs and terms of service that they can change at any moment they want, right? I will not name a company that has done things like this, right? And outrage people, right? And so people are now looking at like, oh, what's up with all these open source alternatives, right? That are made right now are not really competitive, but maybe could be over time, right?
Do you really think Godot is going to be a competitor? No. So not that one.
I maybe could be for certain types of games, right? I think for like for smaller indie titles that are only on one platform and all this kind of stuff, like maybe it makes sense. You know what I mean? Like so some small games have already converted over to Godot and they were like, yeah, that took us like a day, right? Yeah. And here we are, right? And I'm like, sweet. For larger games, it's just not a thing.
No.
Yeah, it's just not a thing. You know, but maybe the next game they make, they think about that, right? But I think also in all those cases, they're also going to have to invest more into engine development, which is exactly why they are using an off-the-shelf engine in the first place. They don't want to invest more in engine development. And engine programmers and graphics programmers are hard to hire, hard to find, hard to, you know,
keep.
Expensive, right? and so like what are you gonna do, right? So I think a lot of games are going to be, you know, stuck with Unity and Unreal, but I do think Godot and Stride and Flex and Bevy and like there's a whole lot of them, right? That like depending on the size and scale of your game, it makes perfect sense.
Yeah, I mean, I hope. I'm worried, man. I'm really worried about game development. Like, I feel like it's becoming more restrictive and like, it's great to hear like these kind of solo devs or smaller teams getting like, it's time to shine. And it feels like, oh, this avenue is becoming appealing, right? It seems like there's a chance if you're a small team, you have the patience to make something great that it has a chance to really shine because the market's kind of aching for it, right? But at the same time, you know, you don't find stability doing that, right? It's like you're taking a lot of risk. You're doing it on the side mostly, right? Maybe you'll find a small publisher, but even then, that road to finding a publisher is a challenging one. It's not as accessible as I think as everyone thinks it is. And so like in the meantime, right? Like the security has always been the stable big jobs. It's always going to be there, but I'm starting to feel like it's not going to be there. Right? Without that, how can you make your little thing? You know what I mean? Like you need time to foster in a big environment, learn the ropes, and then test things at home, right? I can't imagine there can't be that many students coming out and just jumping right into.
I mean, you'd be amazed. You'd be amazed. I see a lot of like some young people doing like mods and stuff, and then that's how they started and they made a game and you know, and no formal training whatsoever. Like, I do agree with you though that I think it's beneficial to learn the ropes from a big studio first. But also I've seen a big studio completely beat the will of making games out of people too. you go to a big studio. And
what are you talking about? Are they in this room, Ray? Yeah. Who are you referring to?
You go to a big studio, you're like, I'm done. I don't want to do this no more.
It burns you out for sure.
I've seen that so much, right? Yeah, so like, I think it's a mix of both. Like, you don't necessarily need to go to a big studio to learn ropes. I think a lot of the information about how to make video games is
But the money's good, though. That's what I mean. Like, it just is to have that benefit, having that salary. Well, it's good enough to kind of just, all right, I can do the thing at home, right? I can kind of get an apartment. You know what I mean?
It's like, I mean, I feel for non-engineers,
yeah,
sure, right? But like when it comes to engineering, like you do video games because this is like a steady job and I'm going to make money doing this. You do it because you absolutely love it, because there's other jobs
that pay way better.
Pay way better, have way less hours, and you can make your video game on the side in a much more comfortable environment, right?
Sure.
Than actually working at a big studio. So,
yeah. Well, we don't have that choice, Ray. You make it sound like we can go to Tesla any day that we want. Yeah. I mean, like for artists, I guess we're starting to see that. You know, I have a lot of friends at Apple. Sure. It is opening up in terms of options.
AI. The era of AI has opened the door for a lot of people.
You know, the era of AI, I feel like it's more for engineers, sort of. Like, I don't feel like a lot of artists are having those type of jobs in those fields.
I think at least part of it is like the whole if you want to train AI,
yeah,
and especially if it's something like autonomous cars, for instance, right, there are a bunch of artists that are making realistic environments
for training
those things, right? Because you can't possibly get enough data by driving on real roads.
Sure.
Right, so there's that, right? For sure. Digital twins and all of that nonsense and training AI, you know, it's opened the door for some sort of like technical artists and the straight up traditional modelers and texturers and stuff. So
the window is limiting, in my opinion.
I mean, there's not a ton of jobs out there, but they exist. Yeah.
Yeah, I don't want to open up another topic, but I do find it like very hard, like trying to guide my son. Right, it's like, all right, it's 5-10 years. Like, what can he do? we're such a in a changing environment. I told him, I was like, it's either space or AI, dude. What do you want? It's like, you guys will be, your generation will be spacefaring, it sounds like. You know, it might be cool to be an astronaut again or work something, you know,
either one of those choices, sound like getting a degree is still going to matter, even though it's going to cost a ton of money. But
dude, like, hey man, I'll end it like this, right? You sound like a smart guy, right? Like every day I turn on the news and universities are sounding less and less appealing to me. I was like, oh, what are you guys paying for? You know, you guys aren't even in class anymore. It's just out there protesting all day.
I mean, that's doing? Not a new, that's protests at universities. Oh no, that sounds so new to me.
Like, yeah, but like, yeah. I feel like they're not, you know, I hear these kids talking and it's like, what are you learning? And like, it's the same equivalent as this, right?
Oh no, the kids are like
communists. I don't know if you can tell, right? I'm a public school kid, right? But we're in an area where you know, my son plays basketball, club basketball, right? All the parents, right, have their kids in private school, and they're talking about high school already. And my kid's in seventh grade, and I was like, "Oh, what high school are you going to?" And they're naming all these private school, and these fees are like $35,000 a year, dude. And I was like, "For what, geometry? What are you doing over there?" But like, I look at this, right? I'm looking at them comparing, and they're like, oh yeah, my kid's in private school, he does this and does that, we pay this much, right? And I'm looking, I was like, my kid is smarter than yours and he's way more athletic. It's like, you're not convincing me, you know? So
I
just don't see the value of school as much as I used to, right? I feel like with the internet, with everything, with AI, with basically school using AI to tutor, right? On any subject now, I was like, what is, aside from maybe the social aspect, but even then I feel like they're just protesting all day, right? Like, I just don't that is, know.
That is part of social interactions.
Yeah, but all the...
That is part of...
I'm cool. Here's the thing, man. I'm cool with people protesting, but yeah. Take off the mask, man. Like, be accountable. You know what I mean? You can't be protesting behind a mask. I can do that all day. It's like, I'll be of right course. Back, Ray. I really yeah. believe in this, but you'll never find me on the internet. Right? Yeah. It's like, all right, man, you don't really trust. But I don't know. I'm like, I'm having a hard time.
It's really true. As we get older, we become our parents.
We are becoming our parents. But I am having a hard time. And I know you mentor students, right? I'm just like, I'm having a hard, it's like the next 5 years is so foggy to me. Where I don't really know how to guide younger children.
I think I guess we could end it on this. The only guidance I give kids these days is do the work.
Just be hard worker.
In the age of AI and everything's online and information's at your fingertips, there's no excuse to be dumb.
Dumb. Yeah.
Right. And so like you gotta drive for what you want and always ask for what you want and work for what you want, like always. And I don't think technology or anything else will change it, right? Like that's what it's going to be, you know, and build connections with people. And it's because like that's what those parents are paying for at those private schools is the connections and the alumni networks, right? They're not necessarily paying for the kid to be super smart, right?
Yeah, for networking.
Yeah.
My kid will still be better. I am determined. All right. I'll end it with this, right? Speaking of dumb and AI, I just have to kind of mention this. This thing.
Oh, jeez. Oh,
these pager gadgets. And this guy's the worst guy. He's, I'm Asian, but bro, this is the wrong guy to sell anything, right?
Man, like, as soon as I saw it, I'm not even touching out.
You're not even caught. So what's up with this thing, dude? Is it just a bunch of tech bros just trying to pawn off new tech?
Well, I would say the one before this,
it's trending.
The Marquise reviewed.
Yeah.
From Humane. Yeah. Like, I think it's obvious. It's obviously like, would it be cool if we made a tricorder, like a Star Trek badge, you know, a communicator device or something like that? Wouldn't it be cool? Right. Yeah. And, and the Texas is not ready yet for that. Right. I have no idea how Rabbit is doing other than I saw a video somebody posted of it translating Spanish. Yeah. And it was horrendous, right? So
it was like, just a stupid,
it was like it was doing like real bad Spanish, and then it was like then when it got to numbers, it didn't even bother doing the numbers in Spanish at all. It just did them in regular English. Right. So I don't even know much about the Rabbit thing, but yeah, I think everybody wants
an NFT hype. Thing,
No. Like I think in Marquise's review, if you actually watch all of Marquise's review, he says he's like, yeah, maybe in 5-10 years when the technology becomes way better, this is something that makes sense. You know what I mean? And it is clear that the Humane people are also they're straight up taking a page out of, even though it's a useless device and all that kind of stuff, whatever, right? Yeah. But they're definitely taking a page out of Apple's playbook, right? Like 100%, right? So like they're trying something, they have not hit the mark, right? But in 5-10 years, where will it be? And I think that's the point of making stuff, right? Is like, where will it be in the future? It doesn't necessarily need to hit it right now. Although they were selling it for a grip of money, because of course it costs money to make these things, right? Yeah.
Dude, it's not gonna even survive to next year. What are we talking about 10 years from now? What are you talking
about? No. I think this product is dead, right? But like
the idea of it.
What about the next one?
It's just so dumb, man. How many gadgets do you want us to have?
Do you watch Star Trek, man? Do you watch Star Trek? Have you watched Star Trek?
Yeah, Star Trek was cool. Yeah, I get it.
Like, and like you want that at some point.
We have something better. It's a smartphone, dude.
It's a smartphone. Smartphone's better today, right? Will it be better when AI gets better? I'm not so sure. Yeah.
It's got to be a head display, man. I'm sorry, man. Like the glasses just need to get smaller. The VR, AR.
I like the idea of your hand being like a little projector. Like it's actually kind of cool. You know what I mean? It's actually kind of cool. Like it's flop. Like,
but like AR can do that. You know, you wear like a little Google Glass thing, and you can project in anything. You know, you don't need like a literal projector.
But you don't look like a glass hole, and now you just look like a crazy person with your head out in front of you. But
this lady doesn't look like an asshole to you, right?
No.
When was the last time you saw anyone with a name tag? And you're like, hey, that seems like a cool person. It's like name tags are like the worst.
It's actually a very well-made device.
It's hardware is impressive, but like there's a reason why people moved away from the pager. Like I just feel like this cloud of like it's basically trying to pull something over people's eyes, like regurgitating technology. You're not innovating on anything, right? You're just looking at, oh, what we used 30 years ago, pagers. All right, like imagine, you know, a pager updated. It's like you're an idiot, right? Stop, right? The only last time that worked was because people were still wearing watches, right? So the smartwatch came out from Apple, and they're like, hey, we got to update the shit, right? People stopped wearing watches.
A lot of smartwatch haters, man.
But I will say, like, there was a good period that people just stopped wearing watches, right? They have their phone. Nobody wore watches for a long time. And then Apple made it cool again, right? Because it was useful. It was a useful utility. And a watch is useful, you know, something on your wrist that you could just look at versus popping out a phone, right? There's a function to it that made sense. Pagers are useless, all right?
Nobody's saying that device has a use today. No one, like, well, at least, okay, I'm not saying that, at least.
I'm saying this. Right? If that device delivered everything that it promised to deliver, I still think it's dumb. Right. Because it's an iPhone app, essentially. Right.
Yeah.
There's no reason why, you know, you wanted a quarter of your phone on your breast pocket. Like, it's not, you know, it's going to break. It's going to fall off. You look dumb wearing it.
I don't think you look dumb wearing it. I think like, no. Yeah, no. Yeah.
All right.
That is not wearing text. That is not wearing a Vision OS. Right. Like, you know what I mean? Like,
well, Vision is failing because it looks dumb. Like, I still have hopes that, you know, the technology will get better and eventually it'll be like sunglasses.
Yeah.
I mean, like Meta's doing with Ray-Ban, sorta, but like even then it's not, you know.
It just takes pictures.
It doesn't do anything, right? Movies, but like, imagine if that is fully realized, right? Are you really going to wear a pocket protector? You know what I mean? No, right? It's like that trumps this, correct? Right? So that's not very like.
I can just tell you're not a Star Trek fan. I can just tell you you're just not a Star Trek fan. That's all.
These guys aren't either because this sucks.
That's what you're telling me. That's what you're telling me is that you're not a Star Trek fan. That's what I'm saying.
This sucks. In Star Trek, they had like the big
later on, they were just able to do the full communication with just the thing. And it'd be like, yo, beam us up, bloop. And then beamed up, or like so-and-so talked to so-and-so, right? Like, you know, just touched the thing and it did all the things, right? Like
VR, dude, beam me up. That's it. Star Trek didn't have smartphones, man. They didn't see everything. Anyways, it's funny. Like, to me, it's like NFT all over again with these devices. Like, both of them, you know, coming out at the same time.
I wouldn't say NFT. I would say it is AI anything right now.
Yeah.
It's the next NFT.
That's what I mean. That's what I mean. This is trying to take advantage.
Some of these startups are going to fail.
And some these two.
And some of them are going to sustain, right? And some of them might influence the next generation. Who knows?
Anyways. All right. I had to bring that up because it was the dumbest thing I saw the last month, and there was two of them.
Right? They're very expensive, eh? They're not cheap. They're very expensive.
Yeah, it's an expensive piece of crap. Yeah. I hope I don't see it anywhere.
Yeah, I know somebody pre-ordered a rabbit, so I can't wait to check it
out. I will say this, right? Like, the forceful marketing of the Vision Pro got so silly at GDC. Like, people were walking around. Did you even see this? No. There was like one or two every day that people were wearing it around on the streets. And it was clearly, you know, Apple paying for marketing. Yeah, there was two of them just walking around in the streets every day.
I did not see that at all.
Oh, I saw them. Yeah. Like, I have a radar for stupidity.
It must be going off all the time.
Yeah. I'm around stupid people all the time. How did you know? But yeah, it's just, man, I miss Steve Jobs, dude. I mean, when was the last, you know, who's making cool shit anymore? Not really anyone.
Yep. Anyways. I agree with that. There's very, very little cool stuff out there.
Well, that's the Roundtable News episode. Thanks, Ray, for dropping by. Maybe next time we see you, get two more jobs because you like collecting jobs, I guess, this year. Just taking everyone's job. See you guys all next time. See ya.